Good morning. Today is Tuesday.
It is.
October the
12th.
Yeah.
A chilly morning, too.
A brisk morning.
Brisk. Bracing.
A delightful morning.
Yeah, something like that.
This for me is an ideal.
You like this day. Fall weather, the cold.
I like the little brisk pop in the morning. I like the clear blue. Highs not to exceed the mid-60s.
There you go.
This is me, baby.
You're in your sweet spot right
now. That's exactly, yeah. Perfect. That's why I spend so much time in Southern Humboldt. You guys, on the other hand, come from a whole different dynamic.
Yeah. Yeah, it was clear this morning, though, in Ferndale. It's nice. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, cool. Was it frosty, too?
I don't know that I saw any frost in
Ferndale.
Were
the cows smoking?
Well, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, we're trying to get them to stop, though. It's not healthy. Yeah.
Well, you know, you do what you can, right?
They're under a lot of stress.
Yeah. Yeah, the change in the climate from warm to cold. All right, are you ready for your question?
I am ready.
Why are so many weather vanes topped with the figure of a rooster?
I would have to say because they were probably put on barns, and it was the first thing you looked at when you heard the rooster.
You going to stick with that one?
I might as well.
Okay. In the middle of the 9th century...
Okay, well,
okay.
I don't remember the 9th century that well.
The Pope.
Oh, okay.
Okay, you're going downhill quickly on this one.
Declared
that every church steeple should display the image of a rooster. The rooster was to symbolize St. Peter's denial of Christ three times after the cock crowed, as discussed in Mark 14:30. Since church steeples were already adorned with weather vanes, the roosters were placed on top of this, thereby establishing... the trend.
Oh, well, there you go. By the way, I'm Greg Foster from Redeck. I interrupted your intro, and I apologize.
Well, I thought, you know, maybe if you got it right, we could introduce you.
Yeah, well, no, I'll take credit for my mistakes as well.
Yeah, okay.
I wasn't even close on that.
No, but now at least you know it had nothing to do with the hen house.
No, and I did know that the weather vane was on a roof.
Well, not all the time now. Well, it's in yards now and in gardens and all over the place.
I've got one on my garage.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Just to confuse the neighborhood?
Well, and I think it's gotten rusty or something because it doesn't spin or turn or anything anymore. So,
you know, there's these things called ladders that get you up there.
Yeah,
you can look at it.
It's just not worth the effort.
Oh. Hey, speaking of worth the effort, the community garden that's down the street from you.
Amazing, isn't it?
That is kind of a cool... What's the story there?
So...
Ferndale, by the way.
Yeah, in Ferndale. So on Main Street of Ferndale, there was an empty lot, and it was owned by a man by the name of Willis Hadley. Willis was...
Hadley of the newspaper union?
No, different family. In fact, his grandfather was a man by the name of Adolphus Bush, B-U-S-C-H, also who teamed up...
Wrong Bush?
His family teamed up with another guy named Anheuser.
Oh, okay. Oh, so there was a connection?
Bush. Yeah. Well, and so it's the Bush family from the Anheuser-Busch family. And so when Willis died, he created a foundation. He was a man of means, pretty quiet means.
That would be the Anheuser-Busch part, yes.
Yeah. a pretty quiet man, eccentric, and owned a lot of property and did a lot of things around Ferndale. Very generous with Ferndale while he was there. He passed away, and so one of the things he wanted to do was create this little park there. And so it's called the WAD Foundation.
Wouldn't be called the Bush Garden.
No.
Okay.
And it's really neat. So Julian Berg is the architect, and...
Went right over you, didn't it?
No, I got it. Okay. I got it. I just didn't want to acknowledge it.
You just didn't want to catch it. Yeah,
I didn't want to acknowledge it. Did the design, and it's got a living roof shed and a big solar thing. And
the sod roof.
Yeah, kind of like the prairie houses. So Willis was really into the environmental things, and so it's really neat. And it's literally a block away from my house across the street from the lumber yard. And
you can kind of almost see the superstructure in
exactly.
place now.
Yeah, it's really neat. And they've been working on it for quite a while. And it's going to be a really neat feature in the middle of Ferndale there.
Within the next 4 or 5 months kind of thing?
I have no idea. But
you're not helping to lay the brick down.
I'm not doing anything like that. No, I'm just watching it. I can kind
standing there applauding with your sandwich in your hand.
I can see it pretty much see it from my upstairs windows. Okay. So I can look over the top of the lumberyard.
Well, they got the water feature in place now.
Yeah, yeah.
So that kind of gives it a little anchor there.
And the nice thing is I'm sure that they've set up a fund to maintain it and all that, given given the status of the foundation. And so, it's really neat. It's going to be a fun addition to Ferndale.
Yeah, rather than some of the other options that are out there all the time that seem to get kicked around, that's actually done.
Well, and it's nice to have, we've had some generous benefactors. Bertha Russ Lytle was a creative foundation back in the, I think late 60s. And that supported a lot of good stuff, both things you see and then a lot of quiet giving around seniors and helping people out and that sort of thing.
That's one of the cool things, I think, is the folks that just do.
Yeah.
And their name isn't on.
Yeah.
I mean, I think everybody's familiar with a couple of those that do it. But you don't know, but you know the community's better because they're here.
Well, and when I worked at the Humboldt Area Foundation, which was quite a while ago, we would see...
You see a lot of that.
You see a lot of people who are very generous, who, not only don't ask for credit, but oftentimes, some of these people are still doing it, say, do not
demand not. Yeah.
And they do that for two reasons. One is I think there is a certain amount of humility there with them. They just want to do the right thing. But the other thing is, you get the word out that you're a generous donor, and then all of a sudden everybody's knocking on your door.
So. Anybody with a nonprofit status, not charitable.
Or a problem or a great investment, so.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. And then the family, the prince.
Yeah, exactly. Reaches out. So,
now, there's got to be a right way to do that and a wrong way to do that. If somebody was inclined, do you go to the Humboldt Area Foundation? Do you do your own research? In REDAC, that's really kind of outside your scope.
Right. No, the Humboldt Area Foundation is what's called a community foundation. And what's interesting about if you look at their yearbook, it's a whole bunch of different funds with different people's names in there. You can just outright give, funds to the foundation. You can create a donor advised or donor directed, so you're involved in it. You can do what's called a remainder trust, where you donate the money and you get the income, and then after your passing, it goes to the foundation. You can do estates. I mean, there's just a lot of different things. I really recommend it. Full disclosure, not only did I work there, but I'm currently on their investment committee. And we can see how those will grow over time and benefit the community.
It's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio, easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music, easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Greg Foster. Greg, let's talk about inflation. I mean, we hear about it. I talked to a couple of buddies who said that if we were using the same standard of definition for inflation today as there was during Jimmy Carter's time, we'd be at 11-12%.
Yeah, interesting.
But things have been redefined, kind of like unemployment.
Yeah.
Been redefined. What sense do you have? Are you seeing a squeeze starting to come on in addition to the shelves not being as fully stocked?
Certainly in certain commodities, yeah. And, you worry about, where those inflation, where the higher inflation's taking place. Is it commodities and fuel? Obviously, in fuel.
Which is the equal opportunity.
Right, which pain, hurts everybody. Yeah. I tend to not get worried when you see every month you get but now you got to start looking at trends and really drill down what is the issue. Is it supply chain? Is it shortages, production shortages, or is
labor costs are
labor
in there
costs.
Also?
Well, and it's, we've talked about it here before, where, you know, 15 years ago, well, about that, 2007, what is that? That's
ish. About ish.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to think, it's about 05 to 07. There was a lot of discussion about upcoming labor shortages because of the demographic shift that's going on. And you do have a lot of people leaving the labor market who are, you know, baby boomers and above. And
but who thought government largesse would be the reason why labor shortage kicked in?
Well, and that's part of it. I mean, I think I've had some folks talk about some of my businesses say they are getting more resumes, more applications now that the extra extra unemployment from COVID is ending. And so that helps. But I think ultimately, you know, when you look at trends, you got to take out the anomalies, right? And you got to look at
the highs and the lows and shoot the middle.
And so the question is, I think for a longer term labor market discussion is, you know, going back 10 years and looking forward 10 years, what's the demographic shift going to be? And are we...
Well, we've got a lot of Measure Z. Gen Z.
Right. And there's
that are out there that are, they're not like their older others. Siblings,
right?
They're more baby boomer esque,
right?
Driven by money.
Well, and there's, you know, the what they call the baby boom echo. I mean, it goes in waves, right? So again, you got to smooth those curves out and look at what's going on going forward. But so if you know, we've had an issue in Humboldt, again, depending on how you define it, and of course definitions do change over time. But where we've had a declining labor force. And, you know, so if you see a community that's getting older on average, a declining labor force, then you obviously are going to have a labor squeeze. And that's, you know.
Well, and then throw in there a stagnant economy.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, well, nothing's going on. Why does anybody want to stick around or move here?
Right.
Unless they are
exactly
on the back end.
Yeah. So exactly. And so it's an interesting thing. And I'm sure, you know, books are being written now on what's the future of the labor force. And, you know, we are going to get even bigger shock to the system in Humboldt County economically that we just haven't ever had since, I don't know, the last big companies that built here were probably the pulp mills. So we're talking 50, 60 years ago, right? But, you know, with the Polytechnic, the Google Fiber, which they got a ship parked in the harbor right now, and a lot of this other stuff, we're going to see a shock to the system that is going to supply some labor in terms of students and all that. But
and maybe magnet.
But also.
And
well,
get people from outside that wanted to come here.
Right.
Now they can see that they can get a job and be able to afford to stay.
Exactly. Well, if they can find a house.
Well,
if they find housing.
Getting there.
Yeah.
Right?
Slow but sure. I mean, I worry about, and we're talking about inflation, but I tend to ramble. But it's all tied together, right? Because housing inflation, you know, all that labor costs, all that are inputs. You know, we were on a call the other day and we're talking about, okay, so, you know, 3 years of this, 5 years of this, you know, depending on financing, we're talking to one of the big developers who's, you know, finally got some financing and government programs in place, you know, after a couple of years and can do it. And, you know, I brought up the point, listen, we may be adding 10,000-15,000 people to this county in the next 10 years, something that we've never done before. If you look, or certainly not in the recent history.
Recently, yeah.
You know, that's a challenge. That's a challenge. And that's a very tight timeline. You know, I've been, you know, sitting in the REDEC chairs for 22 years, and it doesn't seem like it's that long. And now I'm thinking, holy cow, in the next 10, 15 years, you know, with all of the investment that's coming in right now.
But I suspect as the prices go up, then the ROI is there. You can afford to do some of these things, and some of that empty commercial space.
Roll this out.
Whether it's going to be converted or it's going to be used as, there's just going to be more bodies. More bodies mean more demand. More demand means more opportunity.
Well, and I agree. Right. And what we need to make sure then is that the policies and programs and the processes are all in place, so that as the market improves, then we can actually move these projects through to completion in a timely fashion.
Are you saying the structures and the impediments that are in place
now? Well, you know, you got...
not the cultural ones, right. But the systemic
Well,
ones.
A little both, right? You know, because we do have a lot of NIMBYism. I mean, there was a project that would have been underway in Arcata if not for neighborhood opposition.
Yeah, and at least that's how it plays on the front page.
Right, exactly.
It's 8:30.
Something big.
Okay, it's a nice ride.
It's going to happen.
Stand by playback.
And now.
Live. Real Red Meat Radio.
I keep forgetting I'm president.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times at 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Greg Foster. So what do you think is going on with Southwest?
Well, you know, there's a number of things. That, you know, the rumor is that there's a pilot sick out. But
right, but the pilots are saying no.
No, because that's a violation of their contract. And so, I Southwest added a ton of capacity, not just Southwest, but everybody, right? You know, Spirit, you remember Spirit back in June just fell apart.
Right, right. And
there is it was interesting. I was actually on a call with a major airline yesterday talking about adding routes, and this is a network planner, and he was saying, you know, the uppers are, you know, going into markets, and sometimes they're not driven by profitability. They're trying to get market share, which reminded me of Southwest and Herb Kelleher, who was a founder of Southwest. And he said in an interview once, if I ever hear any of my executives talking about grabbing market share and not talking about profitability, I'm going to fire them. Well, coming out of the pandemic, you saw a big surge in airline traffic. I mean, passenger leisure primarily really bounced back. And you also saw that there were so many routes that had been canceled that sort of the playing field in many ways was kind of wide open in some places. And so the airlines began adding a lot of capacity. And immediately you saw last summer, and this is not just Southwest, but you saw a lot of go-forward cancellations and all that, because really what was happening is they were rebuilding network, grabbing market share, and operations just weren't
couldn't handle it.
Right. And yeah. So this airline I was talking to yesterday was saying, you know, we're on a big pilot hiring binge because we are constrained in going to new markets because of the lack of pilots. And so
that's been the case. That's almost like a built-in constant.
Well, yeah, and it has been. I mean, that's been a problem we've been talking about
since military got cut back.
Right, yeah. Well, and, you know, There's not the mystery of a cool factor in some ways for some kids now to be pilots.
Really?
Yeah.
That's weird.
Well, I know. I think it'd be awesome.
Flying is just so cool. I don't care what seat I get.
Yeah, exactly.
You're still flying.
Oh,
I
agree.
Cool.
I agree. I totally agree. So I think it's a...
How's that for being a geek, huh?
Yeah, there you go.
It's as close to the moon as I'm going to get.
Right. Yeah. So I think that, you know, what happens is you grow so fast, you really stretch out, you know, everything has to act just right because you have pilot rules that were put in place, you know, years ago that don't allow you to let them go tired and all this other stuff. And I think what happens is your system becomes so stressed that as soon as you get a little problem, weather or a ATC problem or whatever.
Flat tire.
The whole system just falls apart because it's just stretched too thin. It's stressed too much.
But 1,000 flights in one day?
I mean, that
doesn't sound like a little wiggle.
It's amazing in working with these airlines when we talk to them about, you know, they'll say, well, we have X hours on this plane. We can fit you in, right? And so then that gets into the schedule. But if you look at the routing of these aircraft, right, you know, an Q400, you know, they want to fly at least 9 hours a day, right? And
kind of like a drunk snake.
Yeah. And
a lot of times.
And so this aircraft, and you know, you think about 9 hours a day, that's probably, you know, I don't know, depending on the distance, a lot of different stops. And not only they're transporting the aircraft, but the crews, right? They may go to an airport and then go get on another plane and fly to another airport.
Change out, yeah.
And so once that system breaks, it just, the ripple through is because there's not a lot of redundancy built in, especially now with the shortages of pilots and crews and, you know, rapid growth. So I think it's a lot of factors, but that's just, I think that's one of them.
So you think this is as presented?
You don't want to admit as an airline, I'm sure, that, we pushed our system too hard and it fell apart.
Whoops.
Yeah.
Doesn't count.
Right. Yeah. But I think that's a big part of it. And again, that's what happened with Spirit, and some others. And, it's part of the growing
pain. With those examples though, that you would always be at 95%.
Well, and what
maybe 96. So you always had, you know, if there was an issue, let's say in Vegas, okay, you fly one of the three birds that you have that's unassigned.
Well, and see
go
what
and get them
right. See, and the airlines, you know, the margins are pretty darn thin, and of course we all expect. I mean, back in the day, flying an aircraft was a luxury good, right? You know, we were, you know, Nordstrom or Saks.
Yeah, it was the high end.
And now it's Walmart, yeah. You know, and for a lot of people. So the margins are very thin, and people want those really cheap tickets, and they're great. I mean, it's great. It lets a lot of other people travel. I mean, we're benefiting from that now here. But as a result of that, you can't have a lot of assets standing by, right? Aircraft are expensive, and having pilots and everything else.
But you still have to rotate your stock for upgrades, for the mechanical work that has
to
be done.
Well, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, just all the normal things. So I would think that there would always be one or two planes ready for that one bird to land, and it goes over to the mechanic shed, and then one gets
pulled out. Oh, yeah. No, that's
out.
True. That's true. But
so just get one of those up. And
no, you may not have anyone to fly it, is the problem.
Oh, okay.
it's so
where's Herb when you need him?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's an amazingly complex system when you really think about it, because you have, you know, all the ground, all the air, you know, the flight attendants.
That's right. The crew that you probably need is at the airport that's jacked up
because they can't get in. Right? They were supposed to be in on the flight.
Yeah, right.
And you know, I've been not so much here because we're kind of a, you know, dead end and back, but in other airports where my plane
I prefer destination rather than dead end.
Right, right.
Turkey.
sorry. But I've been in big airports where you know, it's like your plane's sitting there, the onboard crew is, you know, maybe the flight attendants are there, but the pilots haven't arrived yet because they're delayed on another.
Right.
And that ripples through all of the system. It's just like a drop in a pebble or actually a boulder in the pond, you know.
KINS News and Information Time, it's 8:42.
Hey folks, flying local is buying local. And with three airlines serving five destinations, Humboldt County has more choices than ever. Fly an American, Avelo, or United Airlines. We have service to Denver, Hollywood Burbank, LAX, Phoenix, and San Francisco airports. Now's the time to book and save on that getaway. Or have friends and family fly to visit the beautiful Redwood Coast. For more information, go to flyhumboldt.org. Fly Humboldt, more flights to more destinations.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:47. We're back talking shop this morning with Greg Foster from Redeck. Greg, the overall situation with business in the area, is there an attitude of we're making it, we're holding on, we've let go and we're free-falling, or by golly, we're going to be kicking some butt here in the next couple. What kind of, you know, on the butt-kicking scale from 1 to 10, right. What's the attitude?
I'll give you the politician's answer, which is, you know.
No, not, it depends.
All of the above. Yeah. But it does depend on who you're talking to, right? So which business segments, you know, construction and all that. You know,
well, okay, that's
they're
a given.
Doing well. Someone like Wing Inflatables, who just got this new big contract with this very innovative boat they're doing, 45 more employees.
Okay, stay out of any government sector. What do you see? Main Street, regular, small, boutique-y, the guys and gals you work with.
Right. You know, our folks.
What are they thinking?
In general, are doing pretty well. The customer service, retail, and restaurants struggling with getting people to work. And that's limiting them. I've seen, and I have a friend who runs a business that's like, you know, I got to shut down to give my crew a break because we're just too short staff. So that hurts, right?
Kick it out 2 years.
Right.
What's the feeling?
Well, I think very positive at this point. I mean, because we have this big investments in the base coming in, right?
Well, there's a couple others that are still out there circling also.
Correct. And, but you know, that $500 million that's going into the university, I mean, that's a game changer, right?
But is that being spent in the market or is that being spent on the project? Two different destinations for that money.
Both, right? So when you're spending on the project, you're obviously hiring local people to do work and all that. But also, you know, with that increase in staff and students, that is revenue flowing in. And then all the ancillary businesses that might come up as a result of it being a polytechnic. The Google Fiber, you know, that there are people living here now, they're getting paid. They may not be from here necessarily, but because they're, you know, very specialty contractors. We don't have a lot of undersea fiber optic companies here.
Kind of like when they're pulling the rods.
Right. Yeah. But that money is flowing into the community. And Nordic, you know, it's going to, I think next month is when the EIR comes out and goes through all that
process. That's when it starts for real.
And if they get their permits, then obviously they're going to be hiring a lot of people the big first piece is demolishing the old pulp mill. And so that's all money coming in. And of course, when it's done, then you have any that's going to have 150 employees. I mean, that's all good. And we're talking literally, you know, 5 years or 3 years, and depending on the project. So I think on that, I think when you're going back to your question, what do we look like in 2 years? I think we look, you know, barring any other disasters, I think we look pretty good. I mean, we have big challenges we're going to have to meet.
Will we have the structure, the governmental structure in place to allow this to happen?
Well, what I worry most about is the housing.
Permitting processes, right, yeah. And all that kind of
that's
stuff.
That's the thing for me. That's going to be the you know, just from what I see and talk to people, it's not like I'm unique in this concern. I mean, everyone's really talking about it right now. But I think that's our biggest challenge. And it's a really different place than we used to be. You know, you think about 30 years ago when our thing was like, wow, how do we, you know, get investment into Humboldt County? You know, we're just, and all of a sudden, wow, we're looking at billions in the next few years.
That's
real money.
There's some big projects that are anticipated. But my concern now isn't that it's not the builders and the contractors. It's the permitting process.
Oh, absolutely.
That's necessary, and we still have got the culture in some of the departments of no, or we're gonna let you know who's in charge.
Well, and that goes back to my earlier point, which was we've got to – We probably, I'm guessing, 10,000 to 15,000 people in the next 10 years, right? That's a growth that we haven't really experienced.
Right.
And we
need to embrace it.
Right. And they say, well, we need to try to stop it. You can't. Just because.
Who says we need to stop it?
Some, you know, there's people.
Oh, okay. That, just the segment.
Yeah, right.
And
in reality, when you do that, really the ones that get hurt are the ones that can least afford it. As they say, when elephants fight, only the grass gets hurt.
Oh, I thought you were going to say the ants take a whooping.
That's another one, right? So you know, you can have these sort of powerful forces, pro or con, but ultimately, if they can't figure out a way to deal with things, then
that same mentality though has kept Richardson's Groves not straight, and who gets hurt? It's the commodities coming into town and the fixed and the lower income folks.
There you go.
I mean, logic goes out the window sometimes.
Yeah, we just got to get those. We got to make room for people to live comfortably here. And that includes, you know, doing things like senior housing and some of the other things so we can free up some of the market that's
all
locked
the
up.
Stuff.
Yeah. Yep.
Thanks for coming by, bud.
Always a pleasure.
See everybody tomorrow.